The following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
Welcome to another edition of Commodore Hour on a chilly Monday night in the Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Kevin Ingram. Glad to have you with us. Coming up on our show, we're going to have a couple segments with Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. We'll talk about the big win on Saturday against South Carolina. We'll visit with Stack here in just a moment. Also later in the hour, Will Gordon, a 2019 Vanderbilt graduate and PGA Tour professional. He got his card and is out on the tour, and we'll talk about how things are going with Will. And then a little bit later on, the co-chair of the Black and Gold Club, Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Famer Kathy Bender, a former women's basketball player, will be our guest a bit later on. Well, it was a lot of fun on Saturday over Memorial Gym as Vanderbilt scored its first SEC win of this season, closing out January with a 93-81 victory over South Carolina. Max Evans scored a season-high 29 points, hit 5 3-pointers, really played great. Scottie Pippen Jr. continues an excellent run through this season, 23 points and 7 assists after he had scored a career-high 32 at Florida last Wednesday. Dylan DeSue, 17 points, 7 boards, 3 assists, 5 steals, couple blocks. Vanderbilt hit 13 threes. They held South Carolina, which is a really good offensive rebounding team, to only 9 offensive rebounds. Vanderbilt had 26 points off turnovers and 21 fast break points, and led by 15 at halftime after jumping out to a 17-point lead, seeing South Carolina trim that down to 3, but extending it back to double figures by the break. And then Vanderbilt in the second half really put the hammer down, led by 25. South Carolina scored the last 13 points of the game, but in the second half, Vanderbilt hit 15-17 from the free throw line, and Commodores are in the bonus really early and made the most of it. So a really fun win and happy for everybody. They put so much hard work into all this, and had come up empty in the first half dozen SEC games. We've got that victory on Saturday, and hopefully it will lead to more with a couple road games coming up this week. It will be Wednesday night at Texas A&M. That will be a 7:30 tip, a 7 o'clock pregame. And then on Saturday, noon tip-off in Athens for Vanderbilt and Georgia, 11:30 pregames. Coming up next, we're going to have Coach Jerry Stackhouse join us. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour, brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. I'm Kevin Ingram. Time for part one of our interview with head coach Jerry Stackhouse after the Commodores defeated South Carolina 93-81, first SEC win for Vanderbilt back on Saturday night. Here is Coach Jerry Stackhouse.
Well, Jerry, Saturday's a whole lot of fun. Happy for you guys with all the work that everybody puts in. As a coach, how much fun is it to sit back and watch everybody sort of enjoy the moment after a win like that?
Yeah, it's a great feeling, man, just to see those guys laughing and, you know, how they carry on in the locker room. I mean, that's what it's all about. And for us, it's, you know, you get to enjoy Saturday evening. and not think so much about what just happened. You can almost relax a little bit and kind of take the night off and get back to work on Sunday morning. So it was a good feeling, but we know we still got a lot of work to do, some things that we need to improve, and hopefully everyone takes that approach as we get back to work today.
Maybe go back home and put down some dance moves on video in the kitchen?
Oh, man, that's my wife, man. She has some stuff from the summer that we was doing. She put me out there on blast, man. That's what your better half do for you. But that's how we were feeling, though.
How key was the finish to the first half when you look back to the game and having that 15-point lead going to the break after South Carolina had made a run to get it close?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the ebbs and flows of games. I mean, I think we were obviously when our couple main guys went out, you know, they were able to get on a run. But that could have happened with those guys in the game. I just felt better that we were able to sustain that run because those guys were fresh when they came back. So, I mean, that was good to know that, okay, yeah, we got off to a good start. That, you know, we hadn't had a lot of that, but we did this time. But teams are going to make runs. We understand that, and now can we sustain that run and then go on another run ourselves? And I thought that that was the best part of that first half, that we took that blow, and then we went on and extended it again. And I think that was and then in the second half, we were the same way. You know, they took, you know, they nipped into it a little bit, but we were still solid. We were still getting what we wanted. And so that was the positive from that for sure.
Were you holding your breath when Scotty came down upside down on that dunk?
Yeah, I mean, it was scary. I mean, I've seen a number of those over the years of playing and being in those type of games where, you know, it was a good hard play, hard defensive play. Wasn't anything dirty with that. He challenged the shot. You know, Scotty held on the rim a little bit. I had a similar play like that against Joe Johnson in the playoffs. I actually blocked the shot, but he fell and, you know, cut his eye and was out of the playoffs. Had a lot of Phoenix fans that were hating me for a long time there, but it was just a good hard play. But, you know, I couldn't take it. I was out there. He wasn't able to shoot the free throw because I went on the floor. They said they had to call me on. I'm like, well, you should have called me sooner. When I see one of my guys go down like that, it's just a natural reaction to go and check on them. But, you know, I got it. It was just one of those scary moments. But, I mean, he kind of landed on his wrist. I thought he hit his head, but it's his wrist. So he's a little sore. So, you know, we're going to be careful with that. But I don't think it's anything that'll keep him out of Wednesday.
Been looking for that third score. Max Evans scored 29. What do you like about his performance?
Well, I think Max was aggressive. He did, you know, he caught the ball. You know, he saw a couple go in. He was able to get in transition. I think that helps Max's game. You know, we were able to create some turnovers early on, and he was able to get in transition, you know, get him a couple layups. And once you see the ball go in the hole a little bit, it makes it a little bit more comfortable when you get an open three. And I thought they, you know, him and Scotty found a little chemistry there on some driving kicks, and he was his shot prep was there, and it was looking good. So, but I think that we just need out of that group of, you know, Max and DJ. I think, you know, Isaac is another guy that, you know, we can get some, you know, some to make some shots to get some separation out of that group. Jordan, you know, I don't think it has to be someone like that to come out and have a big game every night. Though that we'll take that now. Don't get me wrong, but I think more of a balanced, you know, effort out of those type of guys would be there, especially if we're going, you know, continue to get consistent play that we've been getting all year from Scotty and Dylan. So it's a good time. I think a lot of that has to do with just us coming back to work and focusing on the little things, you know, working on our screening angles, you know, just timing of things, spacing, still sharing it a little bit more. I mean, even though we shared it pretty good, there's still some opportunities where we could, you know, swing it one more and get a great look as opposed to a good look. So we're looking to, you know, talk about those things today and continue to get better in that standpoint. I mean, it's just a little simple thing. Like, and guys were trying to set screens, but their screening angle is off, and you give a guy, you know, one of our guys, and you know, a half a second longer, and I think it's a much better percentage on those attempts as opposed to guys escaping around those screens and still being able to get a hand up. So we got to focus on those little things, and I think that's going to help us.
It seems like we're seeing a lot of fouls called on screens. Are there little reminders that you have to tell the guys, hey, watch it, if you know, you come out a little too far, or make too much contact, or whatever, they're going to get you?
Yeah, I think, you know, you don't want to – I think the rule is you can't have your feet outside of your body. And that's one of the things to look for. But, I mean, I thought the Cleavons had a great one, and they got called for a foul. And, you know, I think Akeem, the guy just ran through him. But, I mean, but I think on that one, he could have, you know, just held his ground a little bit more, and probably it wouldn't have been called a foul. But because the guy knocked him out of the way and he wasn't strong in the stance, they called a foul on him too. But it's something that we have to do. I mean, it's a huge part of our offense, getting our guys, you know, shooters coming off of those pin downs, coming off of pin ins and different things like that. So we got to find the right screening angle, something that we work on in our player development. And which guys are screened sometimes. I think when teams zone up to the weak side, sometimes you need to screen your own guy. But there's something to actually look for, you know, whether your guy's in the, you know, at the nail, or if the other guy that you're screening is coming down from the paint. You know, we talk about those little subtleties that can make a huge difference in making sure that we get clean looks.
South Carolina came in as one of the best in the league at offensive rebounding. What was working in keeping them well below their average? I think they only had 9 on Saturday.
Just the focus and concerted effort from us. I mean, knowing that they have guys that go every time, and I thought our guys did a good job of going and trying to find bodies. you know, we had a few, no box outs, you know, but they didn't really cost us. But I think those are ones that we still have to grade as a negative, because we want to make sure that we do those things more times than not. But I thought we set a physical tone with a very physical team. And I think Andy was telling me after the game that we lead the SEC in rebounding. I'm like, how do we do that? but it just shows that some things that we focused on, and that, as we talked about earlier in the year, with some real concerns that are starting to be a strength for us. I mean, hopefully I would continue with the offensive, rebounding percentage. That's a great number for us.
The guys got out and ran in that game, too, against South Carolina, turning live ball turnovers into points. How much does playing fast keep that energy level up, not only on the offensive end, but also on the defensive end?
Again, like I think I talked about it last time, when you're able to get a little bit of a lead, you can throw in on some, little half-court traps and different things that we want to do. You don't want to, my thinking is, I don't want to do a lot of that stuff early. I want to see our defense get set. Once your defense gets set, then you can go into, multiple things, our zone and different things we want to look at. But because we were able to get a little bit of a cushion there early, made some shots early, and we put on a trap, and Dylan is, he's a problem up there right by himself, just with his length. When his hands is up, he had a couple deflections. We were able to get some turnovers, but more so than, our thought process in that was just to kind of make them use some clock. A team that's kind of methodical in how they want to turn their offense over and the things they want to look for, we could make them use some time in the backcourt. It puts them on the clock once they start their offense, and it did work out for us pretty good throughout the night.
Scotty scored 55 with 13 assists in two games last week, and it felt like he was efficient in getting his points. He was 18 of 32 overall and 7 of 12 from three. What did you see there?
Well, he's getting his rhythm back a little bit from three. I don't really look at his scoring. It's a bonus. I mean, he has the ball in his hands. He's going to have plenty of opportunities to be able to score. I just want to make sure that he's getting in the paint, getting into the teeth of the defense, and making sure that he's trying to make his teammates better, and I thought he did that. He had a couple of drop-offs to edge that he was able to catch and finish, the making the right sprays on the weak side, and, you do that, he's still going to touch the ball, and I'm going to, call enough stuff for him to, when he's off the ball, for him still to be an effective scorer. But just those things are more important to who we need to be. Him playing good defense the way that he did, just a good all-around game, but he's playing with a lot of confidence right now. He's understanding, what we're trying to accomplish on both ends, as you would want your, extension out on the court to do. And Dylan's, complimenting him well, talking on defense, doing all those things that we need to. And it was pretty good. I mean, we started switching a little bit more than we had in the past in certain situations. And you have to be kind of careful with that, because now they all start switching everything, and that's not who we want to be. Right. A lot of points. We want to make sure the ball comes together when the ball comes together, and we have like size, defenders. I think it's a good, but we don't want to have our five men switching onto the point guard too sure. much. So we still want to try to be in our coverages and those things. But we did some good things, man. Some things to clean up, but there was an awful lot to talk about. Good today, as opposed to still some few things that we need to clean up defensively.
Our guest is head coach Jerry Stackhouse. More of Commodore Hour coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to Commodore Hour, visiting with Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse after a win against South Carolina on Saturday and looking ahead to Texas A&M this week on Wednesday. Jerry, to talk about the Aggies for a second, we were supposed to play them a couple weeks ago. Did you already have some of the prep done for A&M?
Yeah, we did. I mean, I think, we kind of know what they're going to do from the standpoint of trying to bring pressure, a lot of different defenses that we've got to be prepared to try to attack. I think for us, just still, being sound defensively is going to help us. I mean, a team that, from the numbers, seemed to have some struggles scoring the basketball. So we want to make sure that we stay sound defensively, and hopefully we can find a rhythm against the different things that they're doing. We got to be ready to, be aggressive, with their traps and try to attack them and not sit back and let them dictate. That's what they want to do. But our offense has to have poise and make sure that we trust the play. Man, I'm getting an assist. It might be the hockey assist. You got to make that first pass, draw attention, and then let that next guy make the play. We're just going to have to have that trust, and guys seem like they're starting to do that more now.
I can never decide how I feel about momentum from game to game. How do you look at that carryover off a good performance to the next one?
Well, I mean, we hadn't had a ton of it, so it's some interesting territory for us. But, I mean, I just think our guys know that, you know, we talked about it, just trying to get that first win and knowing that we were close. I mean, we could very easily, you know, be sitting with a couple games that we had that was in the balance that could have went, you know, either way that didn't go our way. But I think right now we just stay in the moment, stay in just trying to prepare for this next game. You know, if we're going to have kind of an intermediate goal, I think that was, you know, just think about trying to get back to 500. And, you know, if we do that, then, you know, we make some more goals as that happens. But I think that's probably the, you know, something that is realistic for us and something that we can try to attain to really give us some momentum and confidence to try to really finish the season strong.
What do you like about Dylan's consistency? He seems like a guy you can just pencil in for 17 or 18 points and 7 or 8 rebounds, couple threes pretty much every game.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the way he was aggressive, you know, when he made that first basket, and we were trying to get him in the post, actually, to start the game, thinking they may switch and he would have an easier opportunity around the basket. But we kept playing. They played that pretty good, and he got on the perimeter, and good kick swing, and he got it going. So, I mean, I think when he's playing that way, he does so many things for us on the defensive end, obviously rebounding the ball, leading the league in rebounding. I think he was like +5 defensively. I'm saying like he only made, you know, I think maybe 4 mistakes in all the minutes that he played and had 9 positives. You know, that was deflections and steals and getting his hands on balls. And he was unbelievable. He's been that way for us. He really understands what we want. And, you know, so they got a good, nice chemistry going right now. Hopefully they can continue to stay healthy and play the way that they're playing. And with them playing well, and again, we find a couple other contributors, it gives us a really good chance.
How much did having that big lead in the second half allow you to manage the minutes for those two, for Scotty and Dylan, you know, keeping them out a pretty good stretch there in the middle of the second half?
Well, no, I think it was, you know, we want to get those guys rest. We want to give them opportunities to, you know, when we can, you know, knowing that he's, you know, been banged up a little bit, we got to try to find a way to make sure that we, you know, keep those guys sharp for later in games. And it's, hopefully we got to, you know, we've got to either maintain the lead. That's the role of bench players to, if we have a lead, to maintain it. But more importantly, if you can, try to extend it. And so I think that's the, you know, what we need for our bench players coming in to try to buy those guys. I can look up the clock and we're playing steady basketball out there. I can, you know, go down there a little bit longer, but once the team starts to make a little bit of run, we try to get those guys back in the game. So it's, you know, and they're great on the sideline. I mean, they're cheering for the teammates. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, Isaac has, you know, just been struggling a little bit with his confidence. And when he got down to go down, you could just see all those guys were excited for him. And so he could be a good, you know, good contributor for us, a guy that can make shots. He just got to get over some of his freshman mistakes on the defensive end. I mean, like, you know, you got one job, son. If the ball goes up and you don't shoot it, get back and get at half court. And he just has a tendency to kind of still stand around old, you know, some high school habits that we're trying to break that we need him to shorten his learning curve on sooner rather than later, so to speak.
You guys are working hard to try to get Max that one more basket there at the end, weren't you? You gave him every opportunity. Tim and I were laughing to see if he could score one more. He gave it every shot.
We gave Max a couple opportunities. Max took about 4 more opportunities on his own. he had something in his mind, but it was cool, man. He did some good things for us, and it didn't quite get his career high the way he wanted to. They called that a foul on Akeem there on the screen.
Yeah, on the one he made, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I told him. I was like, Cool. Now, come on out of here. You got something else to shoot for next time. Try to get 31 next time.
You guys played two road games this week. I know last week you went to Florida day of game. Will you try doing that again? And is that something that's not really as big of a deal for young guys, given how much they do this in AAU ball or high school or wherever they've played before?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, like, if we were somehow had pulled off that game in Florida and we did play pretty good, I was like, man, we were going to travel day up for the rest of the year. But I don't know. It's just one of those things where we were just dealing with some protocol things and some guys that would have to fly commercial and everything because it was right there at that 9-10 day that we, you know, protocols that we had with the university. But by us just, you know, hanging over that day, those guys were able to fly with us. So it was, you know, that was more the reason than anything else.
You know, going back to that game at Florida, I thought the team showed something in that comeback at the end. I mean, that's one of those where it could have been a 20-point game to go get on the bus and go home. But that span of a few minutes, to me, that looked like something you could build off of, where they really kept playing hard to the end and made it interesting.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I thought we did some really good things. It was just our poor offense was a lot of our problem. You know, we had a number of turnovers that led to some, you know, easy opportunities for them that gave them some separation and give them credit, man. They jumped up and made, you know, tough threes. You know, Scotty Lewis comes out, you know, after missing a number of games and, you know, look, the best I've seen him, you know, in all year. I mean, I saw him play the when they played this weekend in the Big 12 Challenge against the SEC. I was like, man, well, you know, he got it going a little bit at the end, but, you know, some of those early shots that he made for him, you know, pull-up twos, getting to the basket, really got a good rhythm for him. But we got to try to slow those type of guys down, those role players. Thought we did a pretty good job at the start, but, you know, second half, just kept grinding, got a little bit of offensive floor ourselves and, you know, got a chance to look at some different guys. Akeem, you know, made it, made an appearance and did some really good things for us. So I think it was a good kind of confidence boost for him. And hopefully another guy that can, I mean, he didn't have a mistake in his few minutes last game either. I mean, a lot of people think like at the end of that game that our subs kind of let the lead that started with our main guys, Scotty, Dylan, and I think Max had the two. You know, each had two defensive mistakes around the 6-minute mark to start the run. So it's like those. I was frowning at those guys at the end of the bench too, so thinking that they were the problem, and it was my studs that caused the problem. So just things that you just you enjoy about this thing, that because we know that it's fleeting. You know what I'm saying? But the game basketball is a game that's fleeting, so we got to make sure that we stay on them and making sure they're doing the right things.
Jerry, one more before I let you go. I know you talked about this some on the SEC Network the other day. College basketball lost a Hall of Famer in John Chaney, just a legend at Temple. And when I think of him, I just think of a competitor and a guy who really cared about his team and his players. What were your experiences like with him?
Man, I met him for the first time. I was at a charity event at Temple. I was going there when I got drafted by Philadelphia, and when I met him, I was going over there to kind of introduce myself. I mean, obviously, I knew him watching him on TV for so many years, but just he kind of grabbed me by the neck, man, like a kid. It's like, you know, it's just like, you know, like, come here, boy. You know, like he's been knowing me all my life. I mean, that's just who he was, like a teacher or educator, you know, that just happened to coach basketball. That he was going to be a mentor and just like, you know, how he embraced me as a young guy coming to the city of Philadelphia. You know, I'll never forget that. But, you know, I had so many fond memories. I remember probably one that I'll never forget of him, you know, rushing the news conference with Calipari about ready to whoop. So, you know, but he stood for what was right, man. Dan Lebovitz is, you know, is a disciple of him. And, man, we talk all the time about him and Coach Smith and what they mean to us and why we have, you know, such huge shoes to fill, you know, coming behind those guys, because they were more worried about, more than any basketball game, they were more worried about those guys graduating and them, you know, getting a head start on life. So those, you know, the basketball, yeah, we talk about it, we love it, but we know that our main purpose here for these kids is helping them to start life, and those are the type of men that I stand on the shoulders of, and hopefully I can make proud as I continue to grow in my coaching career.
Jerry, thanks so much for the time. As always, good luck this week against A&M coming up.
Appreciate you, Ken. Thanks, man.
It's Coach Jerry Stackhouse joining us for Commodore Hour tonight. Always great to visit with a coach, especially after a big SEC win over South Carolina, 93-81. Reminder, Gumpton Jeep is your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters, been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. When we come back, 2019 Vanderbilt grad and PGA Tour professional Will Gordon will be our guest. Don't go away. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Commodore Hour continues on a cold Monday night here in Nashville. Great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram. Our next guest is a Vanderbilt golf alum, a PGA Tour pro. He is Will Gordon. Will, what's going on?
Hey, how we doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming off the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, one under par for the weekend and a tie for 42nd. Did the conditions get tougher as the weekend went along?
You know, Kevin, they were, Monday was kind of interesting from the get-go. When we got there Monday, it was, we weren't even allowed to go get COVID tested because they were concerned the tents were going to blow over. And then Tuesday and Wednesday were pretty nice, and Thursday was nice, but Friday was pretty bad. But the weekend was nice. It's just crazy how quickly things can change out there, but it made it for an interesting week. But, got some good momentum under my belt and excited here in Phoenix this week, so excited to keep building.
Is that course at Torrey Pines? I've driven around it, haven't ever actually played or watched a tournament there, but it looks like one that I'd almost get caught watching the scenery. It's such a beautiful scene, isn't it, there on the coast?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You catch yourself out there, and, we're lucky to play a sport where you get to go to places like that, and you're standing there watching the people do the paragliding and surfing, and it's a pretty cool spectacle to sit there, and a couple of the holes are right on the water, so it's a really cool spot, and definitely lucky to take a walk around there.
Is paragliding something you would try?
Absolutely not. I was standing there talking to my caddy, and we were just like, that is a risk we're not willing to take. We'll sit there and watch those guys. It's funny. They last year the fog rolled in, and there was about 25 of them up in the sky. When the fog rolled in, we were just like, well, how do these guys know they're not going to hit each other? And they suddenly, once they went away again, they suddenly reappeared. But you won't catch me up in one of those things.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pass on that one, too. You're sixth in driving distance on the tour at 313 yards. What's going well for you off the tee?
Yeah, I think, obviously I'm hitting it solid off the tee. You know, my tee ball is kind of, where I've hung my hat for my whole playing career. And, it hasn't been as good as it has been. The distance has been there, but the accuracy hasn't. That's kind of what my focus is right now, to continue to improve, and the rest of my game is looking really good. So if I can get the ball in the fairway a little bit more often, we'll be in a good spot.
Our guest is Vanderbilt grad and PGA Tour pro Will Gordon. You've already played in 11 events this season. You're going back to last fall. Do you like the way they set up the calendar where it overlaps in the turn of the year?
Yeah, I think, obviously this is my first full season out here, so this is my normal, but, hearing some of the older guys talk, it's very different than it used to be. I mean, there's not many breaks anymore. It's a pretty year-round thing. I think the off season was 1 week this year. It's a different change of pace. When Christmas rolls around and you do get kind of a 4 or 5 week break, it's a big deal, and you try to use that for rest. But it's a super fun process, and you get out here and you get to, go a whole bunch of different places to start the year, and the weather's really good, so I can't complain.
You earned enough money and points to get full tour status for this year. How much did that feel like a win in itself?
I think a couple of events that, late last year, like Torrey Pines and the Travelers last year, they felt, definitely like wins. I think it's a different, that was mentally something I didn't even realize I can really use that for the future and how to deal with that pressure. And, it's different now that you have guaranteed starts, and that's a new process I'm learning and trying to own and get better at every day. So I think those, especially the Travelers week last year, was basically a win for me, because it went from, especially during a COVID year, it went from me not really having anywhere to play to being a full-time PGA Tour member. So absolutely felt like a big win.
And along the same lines, is there a lot of relief in simply making the cut and knowing you're going to be around for the weekend and at least make some money?
Yeah, I think, with the cut, you get that question a lot. And I think it just depends on what motivates different people. I think, a lot of guys out here are motivated by the competition and having a chance to win. So I think, when you do make a cut and when you're playing the weekend, you have more golf. And I think that's the biggest thing, is to have an opportunity to improve your position or have a chance to win a golf tournament. And anytime you can kind of get in the mix, it's a big learning experience, and you can use that moving forward. And next time you're in that position to be in a golf tournament on the weekend, you'll perform better. So I think that's like you said, having the cut behind you and having just the sole focus to be winning the golf tournament is a big thing.
Our guest is Will Gordon, PGA Tour Pro and Vanderbilt alum. What's been the most challenging part about playing the tournaments in this whole COVID situation?
Yeah, the COVID situation is obviously a unique one. And I think, talking to some of the guys at Vanderbilt, it's so different. I think the PGA Tour has done a great job, and you get tested every week. The most challenging part is in the weeks off, I think we have to be so careful, because if you come back and you test positive for COVID, you miss 2 weeks, and that's a big deal out here when there's so many events these days. And I think that's the most challenging part, is when you go home or you want to, one of my buddies is Spencer Chesler, who played golf. I was talking to him this morning. He's getting married in New Orleans, and it's just, you got, for in my position, I have to start thinking about, whether I can go and go to something like that. And because if I come back and get COVID, it's you're out for 2 weeks, and that's a big deal. So I think that's the hardest part, is, on the weeks off, for the weeks you're not out here, because it's a very safe environment out here, but the weeks you're not playing are when you want kind of to be social and go see people, you can't really do it, just because it's too big of a risk.
I was reading an interview with you, and you were talking about that seeing Tiger come out in the Sunday red was a big deal for you. What are a couple other welcome to the show type moments you've had in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think that's one that definitely sticks out in my mind. And then, I played Saturday in a final group with Phil Mickelson at the Travelers, and that was a pretty cool experience. Just having one of the greats, some of the shots he hit, were kind of signature Phil shots, I would say. Another one was, it kind of hit me for an odd reason, was I remember watching Sergio win the Masters with my team while I was in college. And me and Matthias Schwab, who also played at Vanderbilt, were putting on the putting green in Mississippi, and Sergio walked by. And I just, it's kind of ironic. Matthias and I were watching him win the Masters 3 years prior, or whatever it was, and kind of warming up with him, a couple years later. So I think those are some moments that stick out and kind of, further emphasize how cool it is to be out there, but also that, you can play with these guys and you're ready to compete.
You're a young guy on the PGA Tour, but you've been playing golf for a long time. It's a great way to make a living, but it is a job, isn't it? How do you keep it fun?
Yeah, I think that's another big challenge out here. It's easy to get wrapped up in, your performance something I've tried to keep doing is keep the perspective that I'm young, I'm out here living my dream and making a living and, competing against the best in the world, and it's a privilege, and I'm not entitled to it. I think that's an easy thing that you can fall into out here, is feeling like you're entitled to play and entitled to this experience, and you're not. You have to earn it. You have to continue to earn it. And that's the beautiful thing about golf, is you're not signed to a 5-year or whatever contract. You have to continue to go out and earn your right to play out here. And I think that's just a really beautiful thing about golf, but you just have to keep it fun. I think the perspective is the biggest way.
Will, going back to your time at Vanderbilt, what non-golfers, among the athletes, were the best golf players that you teed it up with?
Those baseball guys, I got to play some golf with, Kyle Wright and just a handful of those guys. So they're those guys were big into golf, and I still talk to them. I talked to Drake Fellows the other day. He was We were actually going to meet up in Phoenix this week, but he got traded, so he's not here anymore. But I keep up with Connor Kaiser, Ethan Paul, those guys. So they're big in the golf, and it's fun seeing their swing videos or stuff like that, and just seeing their passion for the game as well.
Those are some tall dudes you named off there, especially Kyle Wright and Drake Fellows, and Kaiser is too.
Yeah, they're some big boys. I'll tell you what, when they connect, that ball can go ahead and get. So, yeah, they're fun. They're fun guys.
Well, one more before I let you go. I know you're a Davidson, North Carolina native, and Steph Curry is one of your favorite athletes. He's a hometown guy. Can you get out there and make 35 footers like Steph can?
I can't. I can't. There's no chance. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to do, and continues to do on a year in, year out basis. So, I'm gonna stick to my lane, and he's kind of transferred over his talents to the golf course every once in a while, but he's probably a lot better doing that than I am transferring mine to the hard course. So I'm gonna stay in my lane.
Have you ever played with him? Played golf with him?
Yeah, so Steph, I played probably 10 or 12 times with Steph. When I was growing up, I was a host family for a player on the team. Boris Minow was his name. He played professionally in the Czech Republic. And so the team was always over at my house, and Steph and I had that similar interest in golf. So when I was probably about 10 to 15, Steph and I played 10 to 12 times, which was a really cool experience for me. And nobody really knew what he would turn into, obviously, but it's been pretty cool watching from afar what he's been able to do.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And you said you're going to Phoenix. Will it be the usual rowdy crowd? I got to think it probably won't be the same atmosphere as it normally is, right?
Yeah, unfortunately not. But it is, my family's allowed to come out this week. So it'll be the first time I've seen my family since, January 4th. So that'll be awesome. And I'm excited to see them. So, it's going to be a different deal. I think they're allowing like 4,000 or 5,000 people out there, which is just a slightly less number than the 120 that are there on the weekend.
Right.
So it's unfortunate, but hopefully next year we can get back to the rowdy week that the waste management is.
Well, keep up the good work. It's a lot of fun watching you play. Congratulations on your success.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Anchor down.
All right, man. See you later. Well, Gordon, a 2019 Vanderbilt graduate, PGA Tour pro, as I mentioned earlier, he won enough money and got enough points with some really good finishes last year to get full tour status. So it sounds like he's having a good time playing out on the tour, even in an unusual year. When we come back, our final guest of the night, Kathy Bender, a Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Famer, a former women's basketball player and co-chair of the Black and Gold Club. Kathy is coming up next. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. Our final guest of the night is a Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Famer. She's a former women's basketball player and co-chair of the Black and Gold Club. We are thrilled to have with us Kathy Bender. Kathy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you this evening?
I am fine. It's great to have you with us. Now, I've enjoyed getting to know more about the Black and Gold Club. I talked with John Stein a couple weeks ago. How challenging has it been to keep everybody in touch and engaged at a time where it's difficult to have just actual gatherings to get everybody together?
Yes, that has definitely been a challenge. I think one of the interesting things about it is the timing is everything, because right now so many people are working virtually or remotely that access via computer or email or text seems to be working. Our director, Christopher Griffin, is doing a great job of trying to connect the dots, but that has definitely been a challenge, and I think we're getting our arms around it.
Former athletes love to get together and talk about their playing days and all the fun they had, don't they? I'm sure that holds true for you, right?
Yes. It's one of those things that, after a number of years, you don't do so much. But what I find is the energy level is extremely high when we have the opportunity to pull these groups together. And as I've said so many times, I just think that Vanderbilt, to have a Black and Gold Club, is way overdue. So people are really excited about it.
For folks who want to get involved or a former athlete who might be listening, what do they need to do?
Well, one of the things we've been working on is to make sure that all of our former Vanderbilt athletics or alumni are receiving our communications. So if you're not receiving the email, or any other communications, please email us at blackandgoldclub@vanderbilt.edu. We're also, you can follow us on social media at Vanderbilt BG Club. But please reach out some way, connect another former athlete, and let us know because we want to definitely connect you.
Our guest is Kathy Bender, a Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Famer, former women's basketball player, and also co-chair of the Black and Gold Club. Kathy, today marks the start of Black History Month. How much do you think back and appreciate the history that you made by being the first African-American woman to get a full athletic scholarship at Vandy and also be the first in your family to attend college?
Wow, that's a great question because I reflect on that often. I come from a pretty large family, 8 kids, and I was the first to go to college. So one of the things I will say in terms of Black history is that seeing is believing. You know, as a middle child, to go to college, the children who followed after me, it wasn't whether or not they would go to college, it was where they would go to college. And they've all done extremely well. So that is important, and I think that's part of history. As it relates to Vanderbilt, being the first scholarship recipient, Black scholarship recipient, it means a lot because it changed everything about who Kathy is today. It provided me with opportunities that otherwise I would not have received. And so I am a strong supporter of scholarships because of that, because I think that if you come from a generation where you didn't have education necessarily, once you're exposed to it, you have appreciation for that. And I celebrate that as a part of Black history because I do feel like that is a part of the historical contributions that through some goodwill I've been able to pass along.
These days, as a senior financial advisor and vice president at Merrill Lynch, how much do you enjoy helping others plan for the future and make those good decisions with their own finances?
Well, Kevin, you know, that's something that I'm very passionate about. I think that people are called to do all types of things with their lives, and it's a mission and a ministry for me. Just as education plays such a huge role, and finance is one of the areas where we as Black people have not traditionally been involved. So I'm passionate about bringing on and educating those who have the ambition and desire to learn more financially. And all of my clients, I mean, I have a very diverse background of clients. So just getting them from point A to point B, I am a member of their long-term financial picture. I'm a part of their weddings, their funerals, their birthdays, their celebrations. And so I'm very passionate about the work I've been able to do as a result of my education at Vanderbilt. So have a lot of gratitude for that.
You've also served on all sorts of boards and different professional groups. What do you like about staying involved with those folks?
Well, in Nashville, I think it allows me to keep my hand on the pulse. I served on the Metropolitan Nashville Sports Authority Board for many terms. I've just recently become the first African-American female to be elected as the chair of that board. But I love watching the city of Nashville grow and to be a good steward for the citizens of Nashville and to make sure that it's growth that is a win for not only the city but the many citizens of Nashville. But on the other side of that, I also like to have a board where it's much more personal. I am currently serving on the Girl Scouts Foundation board where we work to provide opportunities for young girls. And also on the Maddox Foundation board right now. So that community work is important, and it allows me to have a win-win. I definitely work hard professionally, but I think to whom much is given, much is required.
One more for you, Kathy. What has it meant to be part of the Athletic Hall of Fame?
Well, that's a big one. I actually, at the time, wasn't aware of a Vanderbilt Hall of Fame. And so when I got that call, I got the call from David Williams. And I think about David Williams often because I was never the highest scorer on the team. I was a first, but I managed to accomplish some things once I left Vanderbilt. And one of the things that I appreciated was that that Hall of Fame honor was bestowed upon me for a multitude of things, and I was not just measured as an athlete, but I am very proud to be a member of the Vanderbilt Hall of Fame, and I am proud just to be a former Lady Dorf. It's been great.
Well, Kathy, we're proud to have you on our show tonight. Really appreciate the time this evening.
Thank you so much, Kevin, and anchor down.
Anchor down. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
She's Kathy Bender, Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Famer, former women's basketball player, and co-chair of the Black and Gold Club. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. We'll take a lap around, see what all's going on. We'll close the door. That's up next here on Commodore Hour. We'll continue after this. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. About to put the wraps on tonight's show. Reminder, Gupton Jeep is your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters. Been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. Thanks to our producer, Steve Goldberg. Few notes as we finish things up. The football schedule is out for Vanderbilt. The opener is September 4th against East Tennessee State. That will be, of course, at home for the first game of the Clark Lee era. And you can get all the details on the football schedule at BUCommodores.com. Baseball getting training started for the opener later this month. That will be against Wright State at Hawkins Field, February 19th through the 21st. Wins for both the tennis teams over the weekend. The women's team ranked number 15, now 4-0 with a 5-2 win over Miami Saturday. Men's team opened with a 6-1 win over Belmont over the Curry Tennis Center. And congratulations to former Commodore David Culley, the new head coach of the Houston Texans, former Vanderbilt quarterback and assistant coach. And Super Bowl 55 Sunday in Tampa, Vanderbilt will be well represented. Keyshawn Vaughn and Shelton Quarles as part of Tampa Bay and Emmanuel Smith with Kansas City. So best of luck to everybody. That will do it for this edition of Commodore Hour. We will talk to you next week. And a reminder, Basketball Wednesday, 7 o'clock pregame, 7:30 tip for Vanderbilt at Texas A&M. I'm Kevin Ingram. We'll talk to you next time.